Chapter 17. The more time Callista spent in Helia, the more she hated it. It was undeniably beautiful, and she was sure there were those who would regard it as a utopia, but her feeling of it being soulless continued to solidify. The city seemed so sanitized, so vapid, so cold. It felt like a facade, a mask worn to hide the truth concealed beneath. She quickly grew restless in the vast rooms she had been appointed. She had expected to wait a matter of hours for the council to make their decision, or even a day, but that day had passed, as had the next, with no word. On the third day, she'd received a note from Tyrus telling her they had still not yet come to a decision. On the fourth day, Callista took up her spear and went exploring. She found the extent of the Helians' hospitality after climbing an ornate staircase to an immense building that seemed to be some kind of museum. Her way was barred by the white-armored guards she had seen elsewhere. They said something to her, their tone conciliatory yet firm, but she couldn't understand them. Callista assessed the pair of guards, confident she could take them, but she murmured an apology and backed away. All over the city, she found her path blocked as she tried to gain access to different structures and even certain gardens. Where she was allowed to go was tightly controlled, which only made her suspicions deepen. She felt very alone. She missed the comradeship of the host. She even missed Viego. She felt a twinge of guilt for not missing her betrothed, Grandmaster Hecarim. She did miss Ledros, however, and the intensity of that feeling surprised her. Thinking of him was painful, for it brought back memories of the awkwardness between them in the early hours before her departure. It made her stomach queasy, so she quickly diverted her thoughts. After hours of aimless wandering, Callista found an isolated marble bench facing the ocean in one of the city's many parks and sat down. She stared toward the mist, halfway out to where the horizon would be on a clear day. It felt like the islands were surrounded by immense walls. Far from making her feel secure, it made her feel trapped.
Perhaps the masters will never let me leave.
They clearly desired the existence of the Isles to remain obscured in myth and legend, so it seemed logical that they wouldn't wish her to return to her homeland. She thought of Venix, beyond the mist aboard the Daggerhawk. The captain had said she could wait out there for 2 weeks before needing to head to a port for supplies. If the masters refused to allow her to leave, how long before Venix realized she wasn't coming back? She was so engrossed in her unpleasant thoughts that she didn't notice the approach of the petite, dark-skinned woman until she spoke.
The mists are a marvel, are they not?
The woman said, her voice surprisingly deep and as smooth as velvet.
The magic within is ancient and not truly understood by anyone here, though the masters would never admit it.
She wore loose dark robes edged in silver trim over tight black leggings with a peaked cowl that encircled her angular face and shock of white hair. It would have been a severe look but for the woman's open expression, warm smile, and easy demeanor.
I hope you don't mind me interrupting. I often come out here to think and get away from all that.
She added, gesturing back toward the city with a wave of her ring-covered fingers.
Not at all. I needed to get away from all that myself.
Callista said, mirroring her gesture.
Helia can have that effect.
Would you like to sit?
Everyone in Helia was polite, but this woman was one of the few who seemed genuinely friendly.
My name is Callista.
Oh, I know who you are,
her new companion said as she took a seat alongside her.
Gossip travels fast among academics. You are the Camavoran princess, the one who tried to get into the Great Library this morning.
I did?
Not even all the scholars in Helia can access the library. You could seek a writ of authorization from the masters, but they're rarely issued. Oh, and the threshers have access, of course, but no one pays them any mind. It caused no small amount of amusement that you tried to walk in there, though.
Callista couldn't help smiling. The woman didn't make her feel like she was being made fun of, at least not in the cutting manner favored by the courtiers and Alovedra.
I'm Glad I could be a source of levity.
I'm Artificer Jendakaya. It's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you as well.
You spoke to the Council of Helia. How did that go?
I asked a favor of them, and 4 days later, I am still awaiting an answer.
That's not surprising. They're a bunch of pompous asses. Insufferable, self-entitled, and petty.
Callista snorted at her honesty.
That's true.
Jendakaya insisted.
They protect their own interests above anything else. But to be fair, there are a few among them who are passably decent. I hope they will be able to sway the others to help you in whatever it is you have come to ask.
I hope so, too.
The pair sat in silence, watching the birds soaring on the updrafts.
What is it you do here? You seem different from the others.
I will take that as a compliment. Most would describe me as an eccentric, if they are being kind, or a dangerous rogue agitator, if I'm being more pointed. I am an artificer adept of the Sentinels.
The Sentinels?
It's not as impressive as it sounds. At least, not anymore.
There are those in Camivor who consider me something of a rogue agitator as well. Many of them, in fact. Most of the noble families and knightly orders regard me with suspicion.
You're a princess, aren't you? Are they not required to throw rose petals before you walk and rejoice at your every word?
There was a wicked gleam in Jendakaya's eyes, and Callista laughed.
Not exactly. My views on certain things make them nervous.
Why?
Because I want to see change.
Ah, there you go then,
said Jendakaya, slapping her hand upon the bench's stone armrest.
The politics of Camivore and Helia don't sound all that different, to be honest, and it's probably the same the world over. Those with established power always see change as a threat to their position.
Callista nodded.
But enough talk of politics. What sort of research do you do, if you don't mind me asking?
Jendakaya leaned forward conspiratorially.
I make weapons.
Now that got Callista's interest. But before she could learn more, a bell chimed in a nearby tower and the artificer jumped to her feet like an excited child.
I have to go. I'm already late.
She started running toward the main hub of the city. She was some 30 paces away when she paused and looked back at Callista.
Would you like to see my work?
Yes, I would!
Meet me here at sunset tomorrow. I should have the kinks in my latest creation worked out by then.
I hope I will have my answer and be on my way before then, but if not, I will be here.
Two robed adepts were muttering and casting disapproving glances at them. Jendakaya rounded on them.
Oh, go hush yourselves, you boring old sods.
She snapped with such ferocity that the scholars practically fled. She was still speaking Camivaran, which Callista suspected was for her benefit. That was confirmed when the artificer gave her a final mischievous grin, then ran off, holding up the hem of her black robes so she didn't trip. Callista watched her go, utterly bemused. Grail stood in the shadows of the darkened square, waiting, seething. It was after midnight and the air was still and cool. He didn't like being above ground. After so many years down in the tight confines of the vaults, it made him uneasy without a low roof over his head.
Where is he?
Had the boy betrayed him? Was he wrong to have let him go free?
I'm here,
came a voice just to his left, startling him. Grail turned, snarling, and had the speaker pressed up against a wall in an instant. He held him there for a second before registering that it was the apprentice, and he released him with a shove.
You're late. Had to wait for Tyrus to retire for the night.
Rise straightened his robe, glaring at him.
He's been getting suspicious.
Grail glanced around the square, eyes darting between shadows, looking to see if they were observed. Nothing.
Let's go.
He led them around the back of the great library, silhouetted above them like some monolithic beast. It was a truly massive structure, as large as a palace, but that was only what was visible above ground. The bulk of its true size lay underneath, in the warren of tunnels, vaults, hidden chambers, and caverns guarded by the wardens of thresholds. They went down an alley between two wings of the edifice and down a narrow flight of curving stairs to a locked gate bearing the symbol of the wardens. He unlocked the gate, swung it open, ushered Rise through, and locked it behind them.
I can't believe it's all true. The well, the waters of life, all of it.
A truth the masters have long tried to bury and obfuscate. They concocted the tales of it being nothing but baseless rumor. A myth.
Bastards!
Indeed. Now be silent. We are approaching the entrance.
He took them down a series of ever narrower alleys and stairs, designed to be hidden from the footbridges and causeways above, allowing the wardens to scurry around below the feet of their betters without being seen. Finally, he led them to a heavily barred and locked door.
Cover your face.
Rise pulled his hood down low, and the warden thumped his fist against the oaken door. A narrow window slid open, and bleary eyes peered out.
Open,
ordered Grail, lifting his prefect's emblem. The eyes shifted to Rise.
My new warden,
he continued.
Open, swiftly now, or I'll speak with the Magister and recommend you for reassignment.
There was grumbling from within, but the bolts were thrown and the door creaked open. Grail swept past the custodians without a glance. Rise hurried after him, keeping his head low. A dozen different doors led into the labyrinth below, the lintel above each inscribed with a unique geometric symbol. This was but one of seven way stations before the entrances into the vaults used by the wardens. It was the smallest of them, and the least used, which was why Grail had chosen it. He strode purposefully past several of the iron-bound doors before coming to the one he wanted. Grail licked his lips, feeling the gaze of the custodians on him, and flicked through the keys on one of his thick iron rings. His hands were sweating. He paused at one key, unsure, then kept looking. He'd found these keys secreted in Prefect Maxim's cell. Keys Maxim should not have possessed. It had come as no surprise to him that his former prefect was corrupt. Maxim had been very forthcoming about all his sordid secrets after only a little of Grail's attention, chained down in the depths. He was down there still, though Grail doubted many would recognize the pathetic, shattered wreck now. And there he would remain, for his continued existence amused him.
They're still watching. Tell me you have the key.
Be silent.
One of them is heading this way.
Grail resisted the urge to look up. Instead, he returned to the first key he had paused on and thrust it into the lock. To his relief, it turned, and he pushed the door open. Narrow stairs dropped away to darkness beyond. Throwing a glare at the custodian drawing near, Grail lit his lantern from a nearby brazier in an unhurried manner, then led the way into the gloom. He slammed the door behind them with a resounding boom. They could have reached their destination via the tunnels within Grail's purview, but it would have taken days to traverse that winding path, and it would have required them to cross through corridors that fell under the jurisdiction of a dozen other wardens and prefects. While his new position granted him considerably more power, wandering into other wardens' sections of the vaults would have elicited unwanted attention. Of course, the most direct route to the Well of Ages was via the Scintillant Tower, but that way was out of the question, for it was jealously guarded. He'd need an army to storm it. Down and down and down they went, deeper into the darkness. Grail had planned this route carefully. They still needed to pass through the jurisdictions of three wardens, but stumbling upon one of them was unlikely. He'd used the privilege of his rank to access the patrol schedules in these areas and taken them into consideration. Of course, that didn't account for the human factor. Wardens often deviated from their official patrol routes, but it was the best that could be done. And if they did encounter a warden? Well, his blade would be ready.
Come, boy. We have a long walk ahead of us.
Ryze couldn't judge the passage of time in the darkness beneath Helia, but it felt like they'd been walking for days. He'd completely lost all sense of direction and was painfully aware that if the deranged warden chose to abandon him, he'd never find a way out. He'd be trapped down here for the rest of his life, wandering blindly until he died of thirst and starvation, or inadvertently stepped over the edge of one of the impossibly deep shafts built into the maze of tunnels. Down some of those pits, he thought he heard a sound like distant waves crashing. Anxiety gnawed at him. He'd always been rebellious, but this was taking things further than he ever had before. Should he have told Tyrus what this Warden Prefect Grail was attempting? He'd considered it dozens of times since he'd made his bargain with him, but there was no way that was going to result in anything but his own banishment. Tyrus was a stickler for the rules, even if Grail didn't manage to see him expelled from the Fellowship for betraying him. And besides, he shared the Warden's outrage. Why should the Masters hide something so wondrous from the rest of the Fellowship? Why should they be the only ones to benefit from it? Yet as much as he tried to convince himself of the nobility of this act of rebellion, he knew in his heart that the only reason he was going along with it was to get hold of the book Grail had promised him.
This is Tyrus's fault.
If he'd just followed through on his promises and helped Ryze master his power, he wouldn't have ever sought this knowledge elsewhere. Grail's lantern abruptly went out. The darkness was so absolute that Ryze couldn't even see his fingers waving before his eyes, and panic reared within him. He fumbled blindly, then bumped into the warden who had gone still in front of him.
Be still.
Ryze crouched in the dark, trying to quiet his breathing. They stayed there for what felt like an age, and he was about to say something when he heard a noise in the distance. It was an echoing, repetitive tapping, like wood on stone. It continued, getting steadily louder, and soon another sound joined it in the same rhythm. Footsteps. Grail's cold hand pushed him toward the side of the passage. Feeling with his hands, Ryze discovered a shallow alcove there, and he slipped into it, wincing as some gravel ground beneath his step. Grail himself didn't make a sound, moving as silently as a ghost. It was unnerving. A few minutes passed, and Ryze slowly realized he could make out the silhouette of the warden in front of him, pressed flat against the side wall of the alcove. His heart began to thump faster as he realized what that meant. There was a light source nearby. The tapping and the footsteps got steadily louder. They were only a matter of yards from a three-way junction, and whoever was approaching was coming toward it. The light got brighter, and the tapping and the footsteps grew painfully loud. Whoever it was reached the junction and stopped, their lanterns shining down each corridor. Ryze pressed himself as flat as he could against the alcove wall, scarce daring to breathe. His heart was now hammering so thunderously, he felt certain the newcomer would hear it. If this warden came any farther down the corridor, they would be spotted instantly. Ryze's eyes widened as Grail produced his sickle, evidently coming to the same conclusion. Ryze waved at him, mouthing no and shaking his head. The murderous warden's cold, dead eyes flicked toward him, then back toward the junction. Killing a member of the Fellowship was not something Ryze had agreed to. He'd just decided he would leap out, shout a warning, and take whatever punishment would come his way when the tap of wood on stone began again. Leaning out ever so slightly from the alcove, he saw the other warden, the hood of his robe up, walking away, having chosen to take another passage. The tapping came from a tall staff with a lantern atop it, and the man leaned upon it like a walking stick. They stayed there, unmoving and silent, until once again Grail's silhouette was completely swallowed in darkness. Even then, they remained frozen in place until the tapping of the warden's lantern staff was long gone. Only then did Grail relight his lantern with a spark from his whetstone, and his sickle disappeared within the folds of his robes.
You were going to kill that man!
No, we were going to kill him. We are in this together, you and I.
That answer chilled Ryze. He already knew that Grail was dangerous and dangerously unstable, but until that moment he hadn't really considered that he was this man's accomplice, and that whatever happened down here, he was a part of it. He had the urge to call the whole thing off, to abandon this fool's errand. But he'd seen the murderous glint in Grail's eyes. He'd wanted the other warden to come toward them. There was no way that Rise was going to get out of this situation without giving Grail what he wanted. And there was the matter of the book, of course. It was the key to unlocking his power. He had to have it. And so he swallowed his unease and followed Warden Prefect Grail deeper into the labyrinth.